I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. In a moment, a day in the life of the staff of Tell Me More. Now that we're a year into our broadcast this week, we thought we would give you just a little glimpse of how we pull it all together. But first, it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Normally, they give us their take from shops around the country. But to mark the first anniversary of Tell Me More, they've traveled to our shop. That's right, all of the guys are here with me in Washington. Sitting in the chairs are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, media executive Nick Charles, and political science professor Lester Spence. Our barbershop regular Ruben Navarrete couldn't make it, sadly. I guess he's getting his shape up elsewhere this week. But, well, I may jump in once or twice. But for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks so much, Michelle. Fellas.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, welcome to the shop from the studios of National Public Radio in Washington, D.C.
That's right.
What's going on?
How you doing, Jimmy?
How's it going, man?
You could use a shape up.
Oh, man, come on. Leave my hair alone.
Let's see. Well, check.
Let's see you laughing. I have hair.
Hey, every gray hair is a victory.
Right. Well, you know what? Check this out. Barack Obama cuts all ties to the Reverend Jeremiah right this week after the good Reverend flies off the rails during a press conference.
And I think that what particularly set off the senator was the suggestion that Jeremiah Wright made. You know, the only reason he was distancing himself at all was for politics. And this is what he said on the Today Show.
This is somebody who had married Michelle and I, who had baptized our children. When those first snippets came out, I thought it was important to give him the benefit of the doubt, because I had wanted to be politically expedient, I would have distanced myself and denounced him right away.
Wow, that's deep. You know, and the question is not being asked enough, Dr. Spence, is how is this going to affect his profile in the black community? You know, because you and I had it out. This was some time ago in the barbershop about the older black people that probably weren't going to feel him just because he was black and wasn't giving proper props to the old heads by going to kiss Al and Jesse's ring. And now he's dissed his pastor. You and I both know, you don't diss pastor.
I think he's going to lose some support. But the larger thing is that because Hillary Clinton's been race baiting and using basically racist tactics against Obama during the campaign, black people basically circled the wagons around Obama as a result. So even in this case, Wright basically comes against him from another angle. I think that he's going to end up still getting 90-95% of the black vote, and people will still turn out for him in large numbers.
Wait a minute. Don't you think, though, Dr. Lester,
that's what they call me.
That this is a situation where Reverend Wright gave cause. I mean, I've gotten a lot of emails from people saying, listen, we all have had moments where we've said, I don't know what pastor's talking about.
Yeah.
So however much you may respect some person, like some point, there are just times when you just don't agree. And then, and you really think that people are going to say my pastor right or wrong? I mean, it's this kind of thing where he has to give like a John F. Kennedy speech saying that I'm not being controlled by the Pope.
No, in fact, I think exact opposite. I think that this is a case where black people have already made their decision to support Obama seriously. And for better or for worse, if Obama ends up going down, Wright's going to be known as the guy who shot the first legitimate black candidate's chance.
Nick, you know what I was thinking about you? Because you're often one of these people who talks about like the generational divide mm-hmm. in the African-American community. And I'm wondering whether this is a situation where if Obama gets elected, then this changes the relationship that the traditional leadership has with leadership.
Yeah, well, I was making the point this morning with the guys. I said, if you look at the movie Who's Coming to Dinner with Sidney Poitier, there's a great scene in there where he and his dad have it out. And he says to his dad, you see yourself as a black man, and I see myself as a man. And this is a generational divide between Reverend Wright and Obama. Also, you have to realize Obama did not grow up in the same cultural milieu. So he's hearing things from Reverend Wright that where he's listening he might have dismissed, but now it's coming back to haunt him. And he has called this upon himself because he's the one who's chided Democrats for years, saying, you can't be afraid of faith. So he opened the door.
I hear you.
Hey, A-Train?
Well, I think for me, what Reverend Wright got an F minus in was knowing his audience. I think with both Bill Moyers and the National Press Club, he had an opportunity to explain himself to the American public. This was Joe NASCAR that was watching with bated breath. On the Bill Moyers show, Reverend Wright starts talking about hermeneutics and the nuance of theology. And I mean, I studied comparative religion and I barely was able to hang on to what they were talking about. Then you have the show at the National Press Club where, he's doing the electric slide on stage and all sorts of other things. And so this was, to all Obama supporters, and I think to anyone who's trying to keep some sort of intellectual honesty into this debate, we're not talking about Iraq anymore. We're not talking about healthcare. This has turned into a YouTube presidential election. And it really is American politics at its worst.
Okay, quickly, from right to left, can he recover? Nick?
Yeah.
Arsalan?
I don't know.
Lester?
I don't care.
Well, we'll see, man. We'll see. I don't know how to call it.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with the barbershop guys, Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Nick Charles, and Lester Spence. They're all here in Washington. Go ahead, Jimmy.
All right. Well, speaking of issues that were recently called, Sean Bell, the verdict came back last week. You may recall that Sean Bell was a young man who was shot back in November of 2006 by three plainclothes officers. Took about 50 or 51 bullets, and the officers were acquitted.
They were acquitted. It was a bench trial, no jury, acquitted on all charges last Friday.
Yeah, and Al Sharpton, who's been counseling the family, has threatened basically to shut New York City down, I believe it's tomorrow, May 3rd, to engage in a citywide economic boycott to try to shut the city down.
What do you think about that? Do you think that that's an effective way to address the anger that a lot of people feel?
Yes and no. I think that people feel a great deal of anger and resentment towards the police officers, and Al Sharpton works as like a release valve for that pressure. But what's going to be left are the systemic practices of the police department that Sharpton's type of politics don't ever deal with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to co-sign that all the way. I mean, I think people go to these marches for the T-shirts, and I did drop a tear when I found out what happened to Sean Bell, because, I mean, that could have been me. It could be my son years from now. And it's amazing how little value our lives have, you know, in this society, you know. And I'm the dude that always says, you know, I don't live my life, you know, wearing my race on my sleeve like that. You know, I can't deny that I live in a world where other people don't feel that way. It's saddening, really. Go ahead.
Lester, you talk about elected officials in New York City. What have they been doing since Amadou Diallo in 1999?
Right. Yeah,
that's the problem.
Right.
The question is, you have people, there are more black elected officials in New York City now, but what has concretely changed? Nothing, because our elected officials are not stepping up.
You're the civil rights attorney here, A-Train. 51 shots, you know, he wasn't read his rights or anything. I mean, what's up with that?
Well, I mean, you know, when I heard the verdict, the first thing, I dropped my head and I just said, Amadou Diallo. And I just want us to figure out a way where we can keep our brothers alive, where we can say, listen, we know that there are institutional paradigms in American society today that are pegged against you. Stay alive. We'll sue for wrongful arrest, but stay alive. It's important to stay alive. And it's one of those heartbreaking stories where you just, I mean.
Does it change anything for anybody that two of the three officers were also black?
Not for me.
It changes for me, because now you couldn't bring race into it. Because, and it emphasizes police procedure and not just about racist white cops.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it becomes harder to bring it into it. But the thing is if your analysis of racism is just about individual attitudes, then it's difficult. But if it's more systemic and you're talking about police having to make quick trigger reactions, and you've already got a population, you know, young black men who are demonized, those people are going to make quick trigger reactions against them.
Can I say something, though, about this? Is because, you know, I think probably all know I come from a police family. I have six police officers in my family who are both men and women, right? Yeah, in New York. And one of the things that seems to have come out in this is that both of them were afraid of each other. Both sides were afraid of each other. In the testimony, it emerged that one of the reasons that the men in the car didn't stop Sean Bell and his two companions is they thought they were being carjacked.
Yeah. Right.
And that the police officers were afraid of the men in the car because they thought that they heard that there was a gun. And so, to me, what do you do with that when you have both sides who are afraid of each other?
That's a deep, deep discussion about how, you know, what basically you have is two groups of folks, young black men, and now you have a lot more young police officers of color, because there's a lot more Latinos and blacks on the force. And you talk about the whole idea of racial profiling. The question was, would this have happened if this was scores in the city of Manhattan?
Right.
And these white guys came out drunk, and, you know, they were, you know, everybody's trying to be tough and they're drunk.
I'm sorry, scores being what, a bar
scores
near the garden?
Being a nice, scores being a strip club in Manhattan. That's
I'm sorry. I thought it was like the Four Seasons or something.
You know, people like Derek.
For Nick, it is.
People like Jack. Hustling, come on, man. It's people like Derek Jeter go there sometimes. But the thing is, would have happened in a place like that. And this is where also the analysis of class comes into it.
You know what? That really, for me, begs a broader question that A-Train touched on. It's like, you know, how do we stay alive anymore when we can't even walk to our cars? We can't reach for our wallets. Certainly, our best wishes go to Nicole Bell at this time. Well, you know what? Let's keep it moving forward. And you know what? 'Tis the season, gentlemen. For NBA basketball, as the fight to dominate the playoffs is in full swing now. You know, I'm not much of a sports guy, but we know who I roll with. I roll with LeBron and the Cavs, and I'll probably be rolling that way until I die. Dr. Spence, talk playoffs to us.
My team is Detroit, but the interesting stuff's going on in the West. Avery Johnson has been one of the best. I think he's got the best regular season record as a coach in NBA history. Just got fired because he couldn't take Dallas Mavericks past the first round. Phoenix's coach, I think his name is Mike D'Antoni, he's supposed to get fired for not taking Phoenix past the first round, and they're killing folks. Over in the East, you got Boston doing work, supposedly. You got Detroit doing work, and then Cleveland and Washington in like kind of a shootout. We'll see what happens.
Yeah,
I'm a Knicks fan, so you know I'm dead because I'm a Knicks fan. So until you die, I'm already dead.
Long live Isaiah Thomas.
Long live Isaiah. We love Zeke. at this point for me it's good basketball. As much as I loathe to say it, the Lakers are playing great basketball. The addition of Pau Gasol is incredible. And Kobe is actually learning how to pass the basketball, or has learned how to pass the basketball. The Spurs are prototypical great basketball team. Pick and roll, if you love pick and roll, that's like watching art. In the East, you know, since I loathe the Celtics and refuse to give it air, this is because of my best friend Chris Messiah, who is a crazy Celtic fan. I will give Detroit the edge because I think one of the greatest basketball players I've ever seen is Rasheed Wallace, who on any given night can be the best player in the league and can be the worst player in the league.
NBA playoffs, 40 games, 40 nights, winner go home. From the West, Spurs over Lakers in 7. In the East, Celtics over Pistons in 7. In the NBA Finals, too much Kevin Garnett, KG, too much Paul Pierce, and too much Ray Jesus Shuttlesworth Allen. The Celtics hoist the 17th banner to the rafters with Public Enemies. He Got Game bumping in the back.
You've been drinking that green Kool-Aid.
It sounds like he's been drinking with his bookie. That's what it sounds like. Michelle, are you following the contest at all?
You know, it's just, we here in Washington, you know, we just every year, it's like fingers crossed, both of them, please, let's just stay alive, That's how I roll.
Well, you know, I got a prayer out there for the Cavs, the same Cav prayer I say every year. can we just get one more LeBron, please? And you know what? I'm thinking, that's looking something like a wrap, you know, for this anniversary edition of The Barbershop, live from the NPR studios here in Washington, D.C., I have to kick it over to that one and only baller, the lady of the house, Michelle Martin.
Why, thank you, Jimmy. It's funny. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com. Nick Charles is the vice president of digital content at BET.com. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney and contributing editor for Islamica magazine. And Dr. Lester Spence is an assistant professor of political science at the Johns Hopkins University. They were all here in our Washington studio. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Yep.
And to see the Barbershop guys in action, you can check out our website at npr.org/tellmemore. There you can see an exclusive video of the shop guys in our studio and see what goes on behind the scenes when they get together. It's spicy.